thing? I told the president one final time that I believe my oath required me to preside over this joint session of Congress and certify the results of the 2020 presidential election, the election we had lost. It had been a difficult conversation. And now here I was, sitting quietly at the head of the Senate chamber, with all 100 of America's senators seated at their desks. We had come to open and count the electoral votes submitted by the states. We had convened as a joint session in the House chamber earlier that afternoon, but had quickly adjourned to the Senate chamber to hear the debate over objections raised under the Electoral Count Act of 1887. Republican Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma, easily recognizable by his red hair and white temples, had the floor. As he spoke solemnly about vote counts, the Senate parliamentarian, Elizabeth McDonough, seated just a few feet in front of me, leaned back in her chair and whispered through her face mask, "Mr. Vice President, protesters have breached the building's doors on the first floor. Just informing you." I glanced across the room where we were gathered, the rich blue carpet covering the floor, the ivory plaster ceiling overhead, the rows of historic mahogany desks arranged neatly in a semicircle. A number of those same desks were replacements for the ones burned by the British during their invasion of Washington, D.C. in 1814. This is democracy's sacred ground, not just because of its occupants, current or past, but because whenever the American people demanded that we live up to the ideals of the Constitution, whenever we set out to accomplish the seemingly impossible, it ultimately happened here, under this dome. From here, we sent Meriwether Lewis and William Clark on their journey west. Here we ended slavery. From here, we launched the United States into victories for freedom in two world wars. Here we fostered the world's largest economy and mustered a national defense that has been the greatest force for good the world has ever known. And for two centuries, it was here that the people's will was honored, that their choice of one fellow citizen to temporarily lead the American government was formally accepted. I was here on January 6th because for the 59th time in our nation's history, we would certify the election of the President of the United States. As Lankford's speech headed toward its conclusion, I could see his colleagues anxiously glancing at their cell phones. Maximilian, one of the men on my Secret Service detail, walked onto the Senate floor and straight to my chair. "Mr. Vice President," he said, "we gotta go." He told me that protesters were on the move in the Capitol, that we needed to leave the building. I was confident that the U.S. Capitol Police would soon have the situation in hand, so I told him we would just wait in the ceremonial office reserved for my use as President of the Senate. Since the 1850s, the small, elegantly appointed space, a few steps from the Senate chamber, has served as an office of sorts for the Vice President. The room is full of history. One Vice President, Henry Wilson, died here after suffering a stroke. Another, Harry Truman, became President here. The women's suffrage movement ended triumphantly in this same room when another Hoosier second-in-command, Thomas Marshall, signed the 19th Amendment into law. The only addition I had made to the decor during my time as Vice President was a quiet Hoosier autumn landscape by T.C. Steele, titled Road Through the Woods. No artist better captured the calm beauty of southern Indiana, a place that had brought our family great comfort through the years. My senior staff was waiting in the office. My wife Karen and daughter Charlotte joined us shortly after. Family has always been among my greatest sources of strength, and it would prove so in that moment. Along with my brother Gregory, an Indiana congressman, we stood together in that cramped office and watched the mayhem unfolding inside